My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everyone, new episode day. I hope you are ready for a fun conversation with our returning guest, Andrew Elmore. We talk about genres we love and appreciate, and Andrew goes into full Andrew mode and helps entertain and dazzle and inform us all. I love talking to Andrew. He's a fun guest to have, and we'll continue to have him back on the show as long as he wants to keep answering these silly questions. But before we get into the episode, some business up front. Same stuff as usual, actually. I've got some printed proofs on the way that I should have by the time this episode is released of the Beat 'Em Up Volume 1, so that should be ordered and on its way to being available for purchase and shipped out to Kickstarter backers. So you'll also be able to find that on pixelsandpolygons.net to order directly from me. Retro Game Zine, Yeah, so I think we're still the Blue Stinger issue. So we're still in June, technically. So a new issue is on its way, though. When July hits, we'll have the next one, which is the Final Fantasy Mystic Quest issue. That's super fun. I got a couple of collaborators in that one. A fun read, and it's got a little bit extra page count just because of, you know, the content inside, but that's not a bad thing. You'll be able to get that digitally on patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. Along with the other issues that you can purchase now, and physically, like I mentioned before, where the books are, pixelsandpolygons.net. Otherwise, that's what I got. I'm still plugging away at the next 32-bit library book, beat 'em ups working, the podcast is moving. I'll be having some fun times in San Diego for Comic-Con at the end of July, and then at Long Island Retro Gaming Expo in early August. So you can meet me there if you're going to be in Long Island, and I may even be able to time it right and have copies of Beat 'Em Up there for the first time. But if not, you can pick up some zines, pick up some books, and see me on the East Coast. Otherwise, yeah, that's kind of it. Kind of covered it pretty quickly this week. So listen to, you got an ad break coming up and then the episode with Andrew. So have a good time and enjoy it. Have some fun. If you like what you're hearing, rate and review it. Subscribe, tell a friend, share it on social media, et cetera, et cetera. And we will see you all again next week. Bye.
Do you find yourself playing older games and wishing that there were new discussions about those games? Enter Tales from the Backlog. Hi, I'm Dave Jackson, and on each episode, I'm joined by a guest to break down those games that may be stuck in your ever-expanding backlog. Each episode looks at one game in depth, focusing on mechanics, story, music, and other aspects with no spoilers until a clearly marked spoiler wall in the middle. If you've played the game, go ahead and climb that spoiler wall and enjoy in-depth story discussions, and if not, jump out when we warn you and maybe go play that game for yourself. We have over 100 episodes in the feed, everything from Disco Elysium to Tunic to discussion episodes about how to get into horror games, and if games actually need to be fun, or if they have more to offer. I guarantee that there's something in there for everybody. Once again, that's Tales from the Backlog, available wherever your podcasts are found.
Welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke, and I am with returning guest. Oh, I might be spit off my mic. I'm with the returning guest, Andrew Elmore from the Elmore Zone, wherever that may be.
I'm also spitting on your microphone.
Somehow, some way.
Really good aim.
I just took a fresh drink out of the old sparkling water here, and just a few of it
blast it out. I think it's the mustache also helps, you know.
Yeah, catch the
retain some. Yeah,
you want to strain it for sure.
you know that life. Well, welcome, Andrew. It's been a little while since we've recorded an episode. So I always love talking with you. You're a very deep well of like knowledge and information. You have such great recall. We're in a we have a nice little chat we have on the side. A few of us folks, the fellow Goombas, if you want to call them that. And yeah, I always just love chatting with you, interacting with you. Hey, I'm gonna continue to just make it like live it something. You know, it really isn't anything, but I'm gonna make it pretend to be something. And the title, like I'm a pusher of some type of title or branding, and there doesn't have to be. But yeah,
no, I'm strongly in favor of just committing really hard to there not being a bit, and that's the bit. It's like the old Milhouse is not a meme. For other gray hair internet users.
What's been new with you? There has been some announcements and some things that you have worked on that I think you are technically able to talk about. But what's new in the Elmore zone?
Yeah, a little bit. I think to date this recording a couple days ago, 17-bit announced their new game Awasis, AWASIS. Which is now being published through Cult Games, which was not the case when I was working on it initially, but it is now. So I'm glad that they found somebody to be handling that. But I don't think a lot that I did on that is going to be super visible in the shipping game. I just did a lot of the kind of UI setup stuff at the beginning, early on, because they needed what they needed was someone local who could actually like work there and, you know, dedicate the amount of like time and bandwidth and stuff that they would need to like actually build out the UI for their video game. But while they were on the hunt, I was helping out get a lot of that stuff started up, because they need something more than just like programmer art to be able to, you know, get builds going and take them to trade shows and shop them around to publishers and all that fun stuff. Because that's a big part of what I do now with freelance work, is I make and polish up a bunch of UI stuff so that the game looks done on the surface. You have to paint. When you're building a house, you start with the paint, and then you put the wood under the paint, and then underneath the wood you put the, you know, various like conduits, and you want to run some insulation in there and all your plumbing stuff like that. Fill in the rest of this metaphor on your own, but but that's where we're at with video games right now. Publishers apparently don't know what a game looks like when it's not done yet, so we have to pretend that they start done, and then and then you make the rest of it. It's very strange where we're at, but that's kind of where I'm at in terms of what I have to do to keep the lights on these days. And that's first one I think that is actually publicly announced now. I almost said another one, but I don't actually know for sure if the title is out on that, so I'm going to bite my tongue. But anyway. Other than that, same old, man. I am very, I'm finally making some progress on the final edit for this big, stupid video project that I've been quietly plugging away at for like 2 years now. And that's about it. I don't know.
Yeah, seen some green screen photos of you over various weeks, staying in front of green screen, so not sure what the final will look like, you know, when it's all said and done. But that'll be cool. That'll be a nice thing to probably be done with, you know, working that long on any project. I'm sure it's nice to see the exit trajectory. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, do you want to roll into some icebreakers and kind of get moving here? We'll do a couple this or that's.
Sure.
Get the synapses flashing. Let's see. Game Boy Advance or 3DS?
3DS.
3DS.
I held on to my Game Boy Color until the PSP came out, so I never had a GBA during its day. I didn't have a 3DS during its day either, but I went back and plundered the 3DS library a little after it died, and I've been having a tremendous amount of fun going through all the stuff that I missed on there, whereas most of the GBA library has not done a whole lot for me, necessarily. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff on there, don't get me wrong. It's mostly just the sound chip just gives me such a grinding headache so quickly.
That's funny. It's, you know, that was, you know, like, you know, a juiced up Game Boy Color. You know, they obviously, you know, more power and everything, but, you know, that single screen experience. I think of the 3DS, like the advance of the DS, you know, like it really just juiced it up and jacked it up and kind of made it like the best it can be type of thing, but with backwards compatibility. So like your Game Boy Advance fans could go back and play all those, you know, older Game Boy and Game Boy Color games and then have, quote unquote, like their new library. 3DS, yeah, you had this giant DS library that was available to you while they were churning out, you know, beefed up and juiced up versions of some quality franchises.
Yeah.
Yeah, until you drop it into a washing machine at a laundromat and it's water damaged and Nintendo doesn't have any form of like online account system that let me re-download any of my purchases. Oof. And so I lost everything and Oof. My 3DS was gone. And that was the last Nintendo product I purchased. And that's not fair. Their fault, but I held it against them and I still to this day have.
Okay. Putting it in one of the many washing units in Andre's laundry empire. Was definitely on you, but the not having anything in place to re-download all of your purchases part is that's on them.
I mean, it's those beams across the ceiling, the fans that are in the air, like it's just a scenic laundromat, you know. So I was like distracted as I'm dumping the laundry in, and
beautiful
boom,
manner that you're in, yeah,
it's gone. Shenmue or Yakuza?
Yakuza.
EGM or next gen?
I was born in 1993, mm-hmm. is my answer for that.
okay. Castlevania or Metroid?
Oh, man. Castlevania. Unless we're talking about, like, Metroidvanias, and then it's Metroid.
I like it. That froze me for a second. Like,
yeah, I
mean?
Realized
Hold
I just,
on.
Like,
oh, wait,
I spoke
more
TV static, but I was like, yeah, that's, like, okay, classic Castlevania, you know, I prefer, but if we're talking about the, you know, Egavanias or whatever, I would rather play a Metroid, probably.
Metroid Fusion on Game Boy Advance is a great one. Let's do one more. Attack or defend?
Attack.
That's it.
All right.
Those are the this or that's. Hopefully that got your mind working. Let me ask you this icebreaker question then to see if you have any thoughts. But what is an option or a setting that you always change before starting a new game?
I will always run into the settings and just go through all of the like AV stuff. Whether that's, you know, like, you know, modern games will have you like stop and set all the like HDR levels and stuff like that. But I'll always check the audio stuff as well. Do the same thing with movies, just because sometimes the format that it defaults to is not, I don't know, optimal or whatever. Or subtitles, depending on what I'm playing. I generally find them extremely distracting. So if I can avoid them, cool. If not, whatever.
So I've always dreamed to try and have some, you know, fun, you know, video game developing job and everything. And I even went to some college and tried to get like a recording art certificate from Cypress College, thinking I was going to make sound effects or sound design things for video games. So I like music. I like sound effects. I like sound design stuff. It's always been an interest of mine. I haven't really been able to take it many places. But even knowing all of that, when I start up a game, I will sometimes go into that audio menu and like one tick down the music. But like let the sound effects or like the rest of it stuff stay at like full volume. But for some reason, I always want the music just to drop down just slightly so that I want to make sure any like important or key information is like heard over the music, as if I'm doing some kind of like mixing on my own there. You know, it's just a weird thing that I do. And it's like it seems sacrilegious to like somebody who wants to appreciate and look at like the music and audio design of games that I am like reducing that even a fraction of a moment.
I think making minor adjustments or personal preference is fine. Yeah, I don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah, I mean, strange noise. We're going to do intermission for 2 seconds sure. while I check if this is a dog. Okay, intermission complete. It was a dog.
Yes.
And it's over 100 degrees outside, so we have Disgusting. Him inside. He should be happy that he's not out in the 104 degree temperature right now. And instead, he's just kind of scratching at wanting to get into this room with me. So, sorry, dog. I don't need your attention at this moment. Okay, let's move into it. I'm actually curious to hear about your both the answers to these questions, but that we selected for recording. We'll do this first one here. So this episode, I will ask you, do you have a favorite genre? What was, you know, maybe what was the first game that exposed you to it? And maybe what are some key games like in that stable and that were in that genre that you love? If anything jumps out to you, I'd just be curious to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I saw that question and kind of ignored a lot of the fine print and the wording of it and was just like, oh, what's some weird stuff I could talk about, right?
Yeah, so we can omit those things and just, you know, have you speak to the first one then. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I figured I would be really down to jump into either shooters, STGs, shmups, if you're nasty, or just like dungeon crawlers, DRPGs, that kind of thing. Blobbers, if you're an old pervert.
Blobbers, yeah. Take us down that path then for you, for like the dungeon crawling side of things. Like, what are some of those ones that are Andrew Elmore approved?
Yeah, man. I think like Digital Eclipse's new remake of Wizardry is probably a good place to start, because that really, I think, because it's still running the original 1981 Apple II game under the hood, and you can have that like overlaid on top of the screen if you want, or like up in a corner or something, so that you can see that it is still running the exact same game underneath that was always there. But they, you know, make it a lot easier to look at and walk around in for someone who's, you know, not playing computer RPGs in the early 80s. yeah, it's, you know, a proper modern looking video game, but they've also done a lot to kind of open up a lot of options that just make it less cruel to get into, because I feel like that kind of came out and started hitting a weird, like, kind of, I don't know, public groundswell of interest as like Dungeon Meshi was having its moment here. And I think that got a lot of people kind of like, I say a lot, I mean like more than two, looking into like Wizardry and such. And, you know, it was a little bit after like the Etrian Odyssey remasters that came out a while back, which are also a really, really good, easy way to get in there. I know Andre and I have been playing through Shining in the Holy Ark for the Sega Saturn for Fine Time, which is a follow-up to what would later become Camelot's Shining in the Darkness, which is a DRPG on the Genesis. But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird genre because there's kind of simultaneously none of them and entirely too many of them. Like there are very, very few like dungeon crawling turn-based RPGs that have been prominent, I guess, for the last like few decades outside of Japan. But also there's been millions of them because it's a template that's really easy to crank out, the same way that, you know, like modern day Kemco is putting out like 49 RPG Maker releases through limited run on the Switch every weekend or whatever. It's kind of like that, where if you were to like scroll through a list of software on the PlayStation Vita, for example, you are going to find hundreds of terminally horny DRPGs, if we're being realistic about it, because at some point it was just like, well, I don't know, let's put all the anime ladies in here, as is the case with just about any niche genre at some point, I guess, a video game, if it's, you know, big in Japan at least, at some point they're just going to start ratcheting up the horny anime knob. But generally speaking, no, I there are still a lot of these out here, and like there may not be a ton of them coming out all the time that are not, you know, very small and independent, but they are around. My buddy Sert has a studio called Grave Robber Foundation. He's out in Ukraine, and he's been making a bunch of independent dungeon crawlers almost entirely on his own, and just putting them out for like a couple bucks each with really great art and incredible music and stuff on Steam for a few years. And they're all relatively like smallish and self-contained. I'm trying to think of like, because like it's not just the kind of turn-based RPG element of it that I think is fun, because it's that's kind of the blending of like your classic like first two editions like D&D style like real grognardy shit versus the kind of combining that with the like more video gamey JRPG thing. And a lot of that is because of people like Hank Rogers and stuff that were getting games like Black Onyx and Wizardry and Ultima and stuff like that published in Japan in the very early 80s, where they just exploded and took off in popularity much, much more than they ever did here. And people were able to take those ideas and run with them. Like, that's how Jori gives us Dragon Quest, you know, is because he was playing Wizardry and stuff. And it's like, that's where all that stuff kind of branches out of, which I think makes it easy-ish to, like, if you speak the language of modern RPGs, I think it's a pretty easy transition to make in terms of the, like, headspace that you're in or whatever. Just because it's all kind of coming from the same place. It's like, you know, a lot of the, if you speak one of the like base romantic languages, you can kind of understand the rest of them. You know, like if you speak enough, I don't know, Spanish or Italian, you can probably fumble your way through an emergency situation in, you know, Portugal or France. I don't know. What was I talking about?
Dungeon crawlers. Yeah. What do you think? Like, why do you like them? What's the draw to you? Like what about its mechanics? Like gets you kind of like hooked or, like, you know, finding that joy, you know, at the core of it all, you know, like what about it speaks to you?
Yeah, I think, I mean, like number one is I just love a good skeleton, or, you know, like a derelict spacecraft. Like the point is there's always like a setting, I think, is usually a big part of the kind of aesthetic draw for these games, because you are going to be spending so much time really just like memorizing map layouts and or literally writing them down on graph paper or whatever, and internalizing the space around you that you're looking at in a first person perspective. Even if it's, you know, the earliest games were just like a black screen with a couple white lines that are like, well, that's sort of a hallway, I guess. Those are diagonal. Look, it's first person. It's 3D. One frame a minute. It's, I think, existing in just cool spaces, dank, dark dungeons, stuff like that is fun, but also like then taking the space and turning it back around on you into something where like even just existing in that space now has a like mechanical cost to it, and a every step is a like tension consideration. It's just every being really, really careful about every dumb little move and then being punished for being stupid, or I don't know, letting your guard up or whatever. The kind of danger inherent to that is fun, I guess? Question mark. I really like a satisfying feeling of friction in games and when they push back on you. And this might be a genre that can infamously push back a little too hard sometimes, a lot of times, to the point that it almost seems like it doesn't want you to play it. I think there are probably a lot of people for whom most like normal Wizardry games are going to be, are going to come off as literally impossible at first. Just with like how bad you will probably get absolutely rocked in your first encounter within like seconds of starting the game after like spending all your time building up a party or whatever. It's like, oh well, all these people are dead now, and it's all, you know, permadeath type stuff, and it's I don't know, there's a lot at stake at any given moment, and it kind of requires you to be in sicko mode at all times, I guess, just like mentally.
Yeah, I mean, the few that I've played, like, it is, I enjoy that about it. Like, it is a challenge. Like, you do have to kind of, like, you know, have a plan of attack or, like, have an idea of what it is you're trying to accomplish. You can't just, like, wander around aimlessly or, like, you know, if, like, a platformer, you can kind of just run around and, like, jump around and just kind of go crazy until you decide to stumble on where you want to go next. Like, there isn't a lot of, like, unknown. It's either like I'm going to chance like this direction, I'm going to like, you know, double back for, you know, like this safety, whatever it may be. And it's something that like other RPGs, even the, you know, like the Dragon Quests and the that entire like Japanese developed like lineage that comes from being influenced from Wizardry, they never truly like lean into that challenge as much. Like, you know, you can have the game on like a standard difficulty and never really ever lose in a battle, but you play like a dungeon crawler, you know, like Wizardry, like something, you know, in that vein of it all, and you're going to die many times over. Like, you know, it's like, how fast will you die really before you come back to it and realize like, okay, I've got to really understand every bit of like command and actions that I can take and where I'm at in my space to like really not make a mistake and screw up and not just be like handheld through the entire thing from like a difficulty standpoint. So, yeah, it is probably off-putting for some folks who do just want to jump in and have like a sense of adventure, but, it doesn't mean it's not fun. It is a, it's that sense of challenge that I think, you know, brings a lot of like that entertainment value to people who, you know, get really sick on, that first person dungeon crawling experience.
For sure.
I don't remember the last one I really even like genuinely kind of played. I mean, I probably should check out that that Wizardry like updated or not, you know, updated, but yeah, you know, anniversary edition. Yeah, because it's been a little while since I played any. I mean, it would make sense to just to try and go back to the root of it all.
Yeah, that one or the one PS2 entry that came out every year is also really good if you want to fire up an emulator or whatever. I think Labyrinth of Lost Souls might still be on Steam and stuff as well in terms of like recent entries. But yeah, I think like actually if someone is wanting to jump into these now, I'd probably just say go play those Etrian Odyssey remasters at this point. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a cool sort of like abstracted overarching feeling that can kind of be expressed in a lot of different mechanical genres. Like Doom 3 is 100% a dungeon crawler. IMO, you know, like there's, you can kind of project that sort of emotional state into a lot of different kind of modes of interaction, I guess. Anything can be a dungeon crawler if you believe.
If you believe anything can be a dungeon crawler. Okay, well, believe it or not, that's it. We answered the question. Like, that is the podcast. That's what we set out to do. So that's all I've got. Anything you would like to maybe plug or share before we wrap this up and say goodbye for weeks until we record again, or minutes until we record again?
Yeah, I don't know. Elmore.zone on Blue Sky and Mythic Resonance on YouTube. Again, there's not a lot there now, but that's like the one thing that I'm working on like constantly when I'm not like working right now. So that's the other thing that's in my mind at all times in terms of things that I'm making for the good people at home.
Cool. I'll drop those links then in the show notes below for the episode. But Andrew, thanks again for jumping on the show. It's always good just to get your odd mind swirling on these questions and everything. Appreciate you.
I have some hole to just like fire hose all of these stupid thoughts into. Get them out of my head to make room for more stupid thoughts.
Yeah, and that's fine. You're welcome anytime. We will have you on in the future for sure. Soon.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.